Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Hello and welcome to another Punk Rock Bowlin' Turned Out of Punk special episode. Today on the show, from the band The Chats, my new buddy Eamon Sandwith is here to talk about, well punk. You'll hear that in 1 second. As I said off the top, though, this is going to be the last of these Punk Rock Bowlin' Turned Out of Punk collaborations. If you want to get in touch with this podcast, you can hit us up at the email address, turnedoutapunkpodcast@gmail.com. You can also find us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, the TikTok, the like, at Turned Out of Punk on those platforms. Those are all run by my brother and show producer and guest booker extraordinaire, Tristan Abraham. Thank you, Tristan, for everything you do for the show. And he, of course, handled everything for this Punk Rock Bowling collaboration on our end. The other people, of course, who need a huge thank you for everything on their end are our good buddies over at Mutiny PR, who are working with Punk Rock Bowling, Christina and Vanessa. Thank you both so much for everything you've done to kind of make this thing happen. This has been a lot of fun. Tons of guests. The show lineup, as I said, this is a real natural thing for me to do, to talk about going to the show. I'm excited to go there because this is the shit I love. And so we've got to have a lot of cool people on. And today is no exception. From the band The Chats. I nearly slipped into a terrible fake Australian accent right there. Eamon Sandwith is on the show today. They have a great new record called Get Fucked. Everything they've put out has been amazing. They're part of a sort of seeming wave of incredible Australian bands. And we talk about the origins of that wave in this episode. And yes, it goes back originally to like AC/DC and stuff, but we talk about the modern origins in a second. You'll hear all that. So check out The Chats. They're going to be playing at Punk Rock Bowlin'. So I will be seeing them down there, but they will also be going on some European dates later on this summer. And then some more in the month of December, it looks like. You can find out all these tour dates in the description for the show. And that is that. Sit back, relax, and enjoy Eamon Sandwith on Turned Out a Punk. Eamon, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me, Damien. It's nice to be on the show.
Well, as we were talking about briefly off air, we've got a lot of, some mutual friends in the Crazies, in Chubby and the Gang, and the Chisel.
Yep.
And
love those guys.
Great people. Charlie is a character that comes up quite a bit on the show. He's like,
yeah, I'd imagine a lot of your guests would have stories about him.
Yeah, he is a very lovable, I think, fixture in the music world, and someone that when you meet, you don't forget.
Definitely.
Well, this ain't about Charlie. This is about you, my friend. So, Eamon, how'd you get into punk? Do you remember the first time you ever came across it?
Yeah, I mean, depending on how we're splitting hairs here, it would have had to have been Dookie by Green Day. I mean, that would have been, I think, like the first few CDs I bought were like AC/DC, Back in Black, and then I got Nevermind, and then I think I got Dookie, maybe third or fourth CD I bought. So kind of just tracing back from there, and, you know, went and bought some Ramones CDs. And then around this time too, I was maybe like 12 years old. And by that point, it was like 2013. So the internet was a pretty big fixture in, you know, music sharing and stuff. So yeah, I was able to find, you know, bands like the Dead Kennedys and Misfits, you know, all the staples like Descendants and stuff, all pretty much within a 1 to 2 year span when I was growing up in high school and that. And yeah, around that time I was playing guitar, but I found that, here was this music that I really liked listening to, and then I could also play it on guitar too. So that kind of led me to mucking around writing some songs of my own.
Yeah, I think that's one of the greatest things about the genre is the fact that it almost like shuns virtuosity. So as like a young person, you can just pick it up and play it and play it almost as good as the people that are doing it professionally.
Yeah, it just makes more sense to you when you're listening to it. Like you go, oh, okay, that sounds like an A chord, and then he's going up a couple notes, and rather than like, oh, like what's going on here? Just these solos on top of solos. So, yeah, it just makes more sense, I think.
It's interesting because you brought up AC/DC, and did you ever been to the record store Vicious Sloth in Melbourne?
No, is I don't know if that's still around.
Oh, it is. It's the best record store in
Oh,
the
it is?
world. Oh, God, yeah.
I've never heard of it.
Oh, it's incredible. It's like for me as like, a visitor, it's like my college for Australian underground music. Like learning about
Oh.
Sharpies, learning about like just all sorts of Bloodstains across Australia type punk, and yeah, just an incredible
Cool.
store. But like I was in there one time and they were showing me this poster from I think it must be like 77, and it's AC/DC and it says 100% punk rock, and it's for like a local kind of like run of shows they did, and it's done in the same sort of colors as Nevermind the Bollocks. So there is that kind of like, well, definitely like proto-punk quality to AC/DC, but like, there's a famous story about them showing up CBGBs and playing shows. They played shows with the Dogs as well. So there is that kind of deep punk connection I find with that band.
Yeah, I guess it's something you don't really put those two words together, do you? Like AC/DC and punk, but I definitely see the parallels there, kind of, because yeah, they were sort of just like a three chord, attitude sort of band. They weren't technically virtuos. I mean, the solos were crazy, but it was kind of just like blues based rock,
And I find that's like a real kind of foundational thing for Australian music. Like, once again, as an outsider, I don't know if you find it the same way, but I just think there's like, I don't know, something about AC/DC that runs through kind of the DNA of punk rock, even though they're kind of contemporaneous with the Saints. But I think like that influence, that guitar, non-virtuosic kind of virtuosity of Angus Young just is something that kind of like finds a real place in Australian punk music.
I mean, I had posters of him on my wall when I was, 11 or so. So I always thought he was awesome.
So what about bands like the Saints and Radio Birdman? Like, were they, because I know they play those videos occasionally on TV when I'm over there on like Rage and stuff. Like, were they on your radar as like a younger kid before hearing Green Day and all these bands?
Yeah, I knew about Birdman. Not so much the Saints, which is funny, but my dad would play Radios Appear in the car. When I was, about eight, around like, real young primary school age. I remember I really, really loved Descent into the Maelstrom. I thought that was like the coolest song ever. So yeah, they were on my radar for a while, but I think it took me a bit to really appreciate them, because I just saw them as like, a band that my dad likes. And
Yeah.
he didn't like many cool bands, but some of them were really cool. And yeah, Birdman, for example, he played a little bit of the Saints. He played some Hitman stuff, I remember. Like, he had some pretty cool tracks, but a lot of it was tainted by his 80s collection.
Like, did he go to shows?
Yeah, he went to shows. I don't think he was, so much into punk and stuff, but he went to, he tells me stories about going to see like UMI and Frenzel and stuff in the 90s. He lived in Sydney, so that was a pretty big scene going on there in the 90s.
Yeah, like the Waterfront Records stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
It's funny because like I think, especially for a lot of people from I'm outside of Australia. Until I went there, I didn't really appreciate how big of a country it is and how spread out all these sort of like major urban cities are from each other. And because of that, I find like it's very localized scenes.
back then, and like things would only happen in like one city as opposed to across the country, like the Sharpie stuff, or like that I forget, the Midnight Oil, that scene that Midnight Oil kind of came out of, and the sports and all those
Yeah.
bands, like it, but it feels
Yeah,
like
the
that was
pub
like,
rock kind of.
yeah, but it, like it feels like it's not necessarily across the country that these things are happening, or were there like manifestations of it out in Queensland?
Yeah, look, there were do you mean like pub rock bands? Is that what you mean?
Yeah, like, or just like of that kind of stuff, or like what was like kind of the equivalent stuff prior to punk that was going on in Queensland, or was there any because of the task force
God,
wildness?
no, there were plenty of punk bands in Brisbane, like in the early, well, like the mid-70s, I should say, not so much the early 70s. Yeah, like the Leftovers and Razor and all that. I don't think they really had a great time playing in Brisbane because, as you said, the task force would come and shut down all the punk shows because of, Joby Ockie Peterson. But yeah, I think across the country there was somewhat of a movement. I mean, you look at Perth and they had the Victims and the Scientists and like the Cheap Nasties, and I think it slowly became, rolling along in those years where the New York Dolls were around, but the Ramones weren't really yet. Like there was some sort of, seems like there was some sort of inkling towards that across Australia, in Melbourne, Sydney, Perth and Brisbane, even Adelaide, I guess. And yeah, I think when the Ramones hit, it all just kind of, it was like every man, everyone just went for it, every band for themselves, I suppose.
Yeah, because it's like it starts at the same time, right? The Saints, I'm Stranded comes out 75, I guess.
Yeah, there's a story that Ed Cooper went and bought the first Ramones record like the day it came out, took it home, and he was like really filthy about it. He was like, "What the fuck? Like these guys have stolen our sound somehow. Like we haven't even played a gig yet and they've ripped us off."
Well, I think that's the coolest thing about punk is that it almost feels like it was like ready to happen all over the world. So you do have like Lobby Lloyd or the Saints and stuff in Australia. At the same time, you have Dr. Feelgood and the Pink Fairies in England. And then all the stuff that in the US, obviously the proto-punk stuff there, and even stuff in Canada, that was going on there, like Simply Saucer and sort of this sort of proto-punk bubbling up that was kind of happening. And it's interesting that it kind of was like this sort of global thing that just clicks everywhere at the same time.
Yeah, that's really interesting, isn't it? And even because you think, oh, like I don't know, I put everything into like an internet context nowadays because that's kind of how I grew up and how, my band runs now. It's all kind of internet stuff. So you think like, oh yeah, I would have known about those bands, but you probably wouldn't have unless you had all the right zines and had the right people to write to and stuff. Like it would have been a lot harder to find new punk music. Especially because there wasn't a whole heap of it.
Well, I think it's interesting you say the internet thing, because I think that there is still that challenge of getting into punk, that barrier of entry. And it's almost because before it was like an information desert to try and find out about stuff, and now it's like an information ocean where you're just drowning in stuff to try and find this thing. It's almost like the opposite
Yeah.
problem. It's shifted completely.
True. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense. I hadn't thought of it that way.
I noticed with your sort of this, well, not your, but this sort of like later generation of Australian bands that are coming out, and it almost happens across the country. There's like this return to the stuff we're talking about, like that first wave of Australian punk stuff, or even some of the proto-punk stuff. And it feels like there's a real shift that kind of happened at a certain point. And I was just wondering where you think that happens, because I'm thinking back to the 90s. You brought up Frizzle Romp, Body Jar, Mind Snare, even Rupture. Like there was like a shift towards sort of like American influence and stuff, and now there seems like there's almost a shift back to like Australian influence and stuff in punk, I mean, particularly.
Yeah, definitely. I can't really tell you where that would have started, but I know a lot of the bands who kind of, I mean, Eddie Current Suppression Ring would maybe be a good point to talk about there because they kind of brought things really down to basics and they made quite a splash on the music world. People loved them in the States and Europe and stuff. So I think a lot of the bands started taking cues from Eddie Current, either in a punk way or maybe in a more weird kind of experimental rock kind of way. But yeah, I think a lot of bands really shifted gears when they came out.
Yeah, I kind of, oh, I totally agree with you. That was a watershed record that felt like it shifted everywhere. Like, as you said, it caught on all over the place. Like, people were freaking out about that band. And a band that felt like, and obviously they didn't want to do this, but like, it felt like if they had pursued it, it might have gone somewhere else. Like, who knows where it would have gone? But it felt like they were kind of, they wanted it on their own terms, or they did it on their own terms.
Yeah, I mean, I reckon they could have been like the Hives or something, you know? They could have been this huge sort of like arena sort of band, but obviously that's the opposite of what those guys wanted to
And it's, but it then, like, you're looking at, as you're saying, like, these reverberations that kind of come after that, where like Royal Headache, or there's sort of like a whole, I guess Total Control is kind of the same time, but like, there's like this whole kind of wave of bands that are yeah, like it shifted and became a lot more, I don't know, for my taste, like a lot more interesting at that point.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, and I think just bands continued, bringing it down to basics. There was just a plethora of amazing Melbourne and Sydney, even Brisbane too, bands all over Australia, I should say. I shouldn't exclude anywhere, but just a huge amount of great bands that were kind of, looking back further and being like, what else is there, you know?
You see it almost happen in England too. Like, now there's like a real shift back to bands doing sort of, well, like taking more of a pub rock influence, or taking some of that sort of first wave English punk influence. Whereas I remember when we first started going over there playing shows, it was just like a lot of American influence bands, like a lot of bands sounding like, bands that you would wind up playing with at random US suburbs.
Okay, really?
Yeah, I guess it just takes like a shift where people just kind of realize, like, oh shit, the stuff that's here is awesome.
Yeah, and I think like I've even done that when you're trying to write stuff and you're trying to get a little bit tricky with it, and then maybe you'll hear a record or your mate's band or something, and you're like, ah, shit, like they make it so easy. Why don't I just, dumb it down a little bit? Well, not dumb it down, but you know what I mean?
Yeah, because it just becomes it's so easy to kind of like follow the leader a little bit, not follow the leader, but like, yeah, take that inspiration and kind of run with it in your own way.
Definitely, yeah.
So where did you kind of go from hearing Green Day? Like, was there any sort of local scene happening around you, or any sort of like way to kind of tap into this beyond sort of on the internet?
No, so I grew up in Mackay, which is like a mining town in central Queensland, and in high school I moved to the Sunshine Coast, which is about an hour and a half north of Brisbane. So I did high school up there, and that's when I was really into music. Wasn't really any kind of scene that I was interested in on the Sunshine Coast. A lot of it was very like modern kind of, I wouldn't even say hardcore, I'd say more like metalcore, like Parkway Drive and Amity Affliction sort of bands, which I got nothing against them, but it just wasn't the sort of stuff that I wanted to listen to or wanted to go to those sort of shows. So, yeah, I didn't really go to any shows until I was about 16 or so, and I would catch the train down here to Brisbane. There'd be some sort of house show on, maybe even a couple. And yeah, because on the Sunshine Coast, there were two venues. You had to be 18 to get into either of them. Say a band like Cosmic Psychos or Friends of Rome would come along, I couldn't go. I'd be spewing. So I found out there was these house shows that you could just go to if and they were cool about it, having 16-year-olds there or whatever. And just rock up to someone's house and sit around and wait for the bands to come on. They'd play in the backyard or in the living room or in the kitchen or something. And just from talking to people at those shows, I'd be like, oh, I'm trying to get a band going. And they'd be like, oh, well, if you do, you can play in our kitchen. And I'd be like, oh, really? That's awesome, you know? So, yeah, we got the chats going in our last year of high school, and then we kind of started doing the house party circuit.
It's interesting because at the same time as you're doing this house party circuit, that you start going viral online with the music you're putting up there. So it's almost like, well, Is there like a disconnect between what you're doing at this sort of live, very sort of like old school grassroots, like playing live shows, being part of a scene versus this sort of like new way of kind of connecting with fans all over the world that's ultimately like a lot much larger pool that you're kind of hitting?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was pretty weird because it was cool because, people were starting to pay a bit of attention to us, and they'd come to some gigs and be like, "Oh yeah, came to see us, and you guys were good or whatever." And always like that. But yeah, it was kind of weird dealing with that sort of stuff because I was always the one who would do the emails and the Bandcamp stuff, and eventually it just got a bit hectic, and people would emailing me stuff like, "Hey, when are you guys going to come to Germany?" I'd be like, "Germany, mate, we can't even get to Sydney." Like, it was all a bit overwhelming,
And this is the way it is now. Like, so, but like, there's it's almost like skipping all these natural steps that bands used to have to do, where it's like, okay, we'll play a bunch of local shows, and then we'll play the next big city over, and then we'll do like a national tour, and then like that sort of thing. Versus now, where it goes like, okay, you got fans all over the world. Like, you got fans in Germany that want to see you as much as there's people in Sydney that want to see you.
Which is a cool thing. I think the internet's great for that sort of thing. Being able to like spread, your music around and have people, just be able to contact you that easily rather than having to write to your record label or whatever. I don't know, really. Or I guess bands had like a PO box back then, didn't they?
Yeah, there would be PO boxes or people's addresses. Vinny Stigma put his apartment address in the first Agnostic Front record, and you can still go to that address, and he's still there.
Really? Oh, that's so cool.
Yeah,
Oh, that's awesome.
there's like a lot of trust back then. Like stuff now where like there's no way I'd want to publish my phone number on the internet and be like, hey, hit me up if you're looking for shows, but. That used to like send that into Maxim Rock and Roll when they would put out that book Your Own Fucking Life, and like, here's my home address, here's my phone number, hit me up if you want shows when you're in town.
Yeah, there's something really pure about that though, because that's only going to be seen by people. No one's going to come and light your house on fire or fucking tap your phone lines or anything. They're there for the right reasons. They're there to book shows and stuff,
I think that's a great idea for a like an 80s throwback horror movie. Someone who's like a serial killer working their way through Book Your Own Fucking Life.
Oh, that's great. Yeah. Yeah, and then they end up at Stigma's place.
The wrong house. That movie turns very quickly into a different kind of film when they show up at
Yeah.
Stigma's house and get stomped. Where did you. Like, where was the first time you guys kind of left playing locally?
Well, it's funny. We actually went to Perth. Like, we.
The opposite side of the country?
Yeah, the opposite side of the country where I'm sure most international bands just don't even go there because it's quite expensive to fly there. There's only really one or two spots you can really play over there. But we managed to line up like a 4-date kind of weekend or tour over there. And we were only 18 at this point. We hadn't gone outside of the Sunshine Coast or Brisbane or the Gold Coast, which is all kind of one. 3-hour long radius on the East Coast. But yeah, we went over there and we did some shows. Yeah, it's funny to look back on because you don't really think of it as anything that special at the time. But I've got really fond memories of that tour just because we were so young and inexperienced. We'd play the show and just leave all of our stuff in the venue, and then we'd come back at like 10 in the morning because we'd have to drive somewhere, and we'd go, "Well, what the fuck? They're not even open." We'd be like banging on the door, like, "Hey, we got to get our shit." So we'd have to like stick around until like 2 until someone had come pick us, let us in, and we'd get our stuff and, hoof it down to the next show. But then we just do the same thing that night. Like, it was just ridiculous.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
I think touring Australia, it's probably actually more extreme, but like it's very comparable to touring Canada in the sense that you'll have drives for like 2 days without having a show.
See, we've never done a proper Canada tour. We've only like tacked on Vancouver to a tour or tacked on Toronto, Montreal to a tour, you know?
There's like a lot of bands that where that's all they do. You know, like it's like Australia, like we have a very kind of like Canadian centric music industry that also exists here where like there are bands that's all you do. But it's there's like drives that are certainly in winter pretty treacherous, like across the mountains and stuff. But more than that, it's just boredom.
Right. Because if you can drive 2 days, like that's quite a big distance without any towns worth playing a show in.
Yeah, like when you get to the prairies, there's a couple long ass drives. There's like one drive where there's like one stop that if you don't fill up at that stop, you're fucked.
Far out. Okay. Well, we got to plan this Canada tour pretty well then. You got to tell us where the good servos are.
Brisbane, in my experience, which is completely contrasted with what I've heard about the Task Force era, one of the wilder drug, and I mean soft drugs, psychedelic drugs, weed kind of places that I've ever been to.
Oh, really?
Oh, man. I smoked DMT there for the first time. Learned about research chemicals there for the first time. Like, it just feels like, and there's that, what's that, and I'm sorry for blanking on it, but there's that town, maybe a 2 hour drive where it's kind of like decriminalized weed within the town. It's like a hippie surfing community.
Like Nimbin, you're probably Nimbin. Thinking of.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, they got the Mardi Gras festival on this weekend.
It's this weekend?
Yeah, man.
Oh my gosh. I'm going to fly in tomorrow, pick me up at the airport. I got a plan. I wonder if that, do you think that's like a reaction to that kind of era of incredible repression? And I guess maybe if you want to talk about that a little bit, because I don't even really know too much beyond the Razor song.
Yeah. So for the task force where this like crew of cops put together by the premier at the time, Joe Bjorke-Petersen, who was basically just a right-wing maniac, had a strong hatred for things he didn't understand. So he put together this task force to basically go shut down these punk shows because he saw it all as a very like violent uprising against the governments, which it really wasn't. I mean, it was kind of just the shows were a way to get kids to express themselves, and he didn't like that. So he'd send in cops to just essentially beat the shit out of these kids in order to scare them out of like this lifestyle, I suppose. And as you would, you know, probably guess, it did the exact opposite effect and kind of, I don't know, it kind of made it more notorious to be like a punk band. It kind of made it cooler, I suppose. And yeah, like these bands, they would fight to open the gig, which is, you know, that sounds ridiculous, but that ensured that they would get through their whole set without the cops coming to shut the whole thing down. Because they'd usually cotton onto it by the fact that a band had played and, you know, maybe another band's on and they'd hear something, be like, all right, we got to go down and shut it down. So, I think even that happened to Dead Kennedys. Like they went to play in Brisbane and all the bands like, all right, you guys should probably play first. You know, you're from out of town. And they were like, what do you mean play first? But their drummer, DH, got arrested on the street because the task force thought he was an Aboriginal man. They threw him in the back of the paddy wagon. Holy fuck. You couldn't even be a black guy in that time, you know, let alone a fucking punk, you know, like it was, it was pretty, pretty dark in those days. Jello even said that he felt safer in East Berlin in the 80s than he did in Brisbane.
Which is wild. But I've heard that your cops could just arrest you and hold you for 48 hours because they thought you were mentally unfit to be out on the streets or some shit. Like there was just.
Yeah. Yeah. That happened to a couple of. couple of blokes have spoken to about that era. You know, they just like wake up and they'd be like, all right, you got 36 hours left.
Out of that, though, like you're saying, like there's a lot of kids looking for an outlet, and punk probably provided that. Like there's a reason that is such a hotbed for this music, even given how probably oppressive it was to try and do a band back then, like where you have to play first or get thrown in jail.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's like nowhere to practice. There's, you know, a handful of bands to play with, and yeah, it's just all those things that make a scene somewhat difficult in a way. It was everything was just exacerbated.
Well, it's very similar to like what you hear about Los Angeles too, and sort of the, which is I guess a few years later, but like kind of the heavy police presence in the punk scene there, which is not something that's uncommon in punk, obviously, but the brutality of the cops in that area and in Los Angeles, you kind of hear, were on a particular level.
Yeah, I have heard stories about that. It's pretty awful, but I guess we're in a place now that, like, if that were to occur at a show, if cops were just to show up for no fucking reason and start bashing people, everyone just film that immediately. It'd be all
did
over
you see
the news.
That footage, time, I think it was like. So, Section 8 playing in LA under the freeway at the end of the pandemic, and there's all the cops driving on the freeway above them. They're underneath the freeway playing, and there's all the cops driving above them with the sirens on, and you could tell the cops are just like, what the fuck are we gonna do? Like, there's a trillion kids with a trillion cameras down there.
Yeah, we're outnumbered. I remember seeing that very
especially at that point too, footage. Where it was like, is it going to come back? Is it, are shows going to come back?
Yeah. I remember we did a few shows in the pandemic because Brisbane was somewhat okay with the whole COVID thing. Like, I think it may have been a combination of our really humid weather that just sometimes doesn't really allow people to get colds, and also I think people were just pretty responsible about it up here, so we only really had maybe 2 months of lockdown, so we were back playing shows kind of semi-regularly, and then we go back
yeah
into
as
like
Canada is
short
as
lockdown,
we were talking
so.
Off air before the show a place with a lot of airborne illnesses and viruses going around. COVID, we were locked down for quite a bit here, and people weren't the most responsible here in the way they handled things. And yeah, we were the,
we
did have that trucker convoy in Canada. So it wasn't quite January 6th, but we were America Junior on that too. Yes, exactly.
Right. Just like in everything else.
I find the relationship between Canada and America very similar to like New Zealand and Australia.
Yeah, definitely. I love New Zealand though, and I love Canada.
Yeah, like,
so I've got really
they gave
to
the
say
world
that place.
Flying Nun Records, and we gave the world Drake. So, you know, thank you. You're welcome, I should say.
I mean,
we've got some good bands here.
Subhumans,
we got Joshy and his record store, and you know, Chain Whip. But we also got like Canada's the birthplace of hardcore. DOA, as you say, Subhumans. So we got some good stuff.
Yeah,
the other Subhumans though are playing at Punk Rock Bowling. They're fantastic.
Yeah.
They're fucking
very
awesome.
Much looking forward to
that. Oh, it's gonna be a fun time.
Yeah. Well, I've never seen them. I can't wait. I've never seen really any of the bands on the Punk Rock.
That's a pretty good one to see.
Except for Devo. So
out of
yeah, well, I saw them at the end of last year in Melbourne, and it was dubbed. It was like billed as like their final show.
I think they're
ever.
Doing the, like the last tour though now.
But it wasn't.
So that might have been like the final Melbourne show ever, right?
Yeah, but it was also it was meant to be the final Devo show. But anyway, I digress.
Hey,
it's
for one, am glad they lied to you Devo, because I'm glad I'm going to get to see them in Vegas again. So. Yeah, my wife and I are going down for a.
Oh, you're
gonna
be there? That's great.
Vacation. It's like playing it I've had the most
Cool.
fun. So just going there and not having to play a show, just hanging out. Oh my gosh, it's gonna be, it's like my Club Med. Yeah, it's like wild, like a bunch of
Sick.
punks taking over a hotel in Las Vegas. Like the pool looks like the Warped Tour retirement community. It's the
Sick.
same weekend as AEW's
No
big
studs in the
pay-per-view in
pool.
Las Vegas too, so there's gonna be a lot of wrestling around. It's gonna be like between punk and wrestling, a true nerd fest in Las Vegas. It's gonna be a fun weekend.
Oh yeah, I bet. Wow. Well, there'll be some people that
I
you
will
can't really
say,
tell which one they're there for.
last time I was there, I went to both events. Like the we all looked like Oasis or the Fonz in punk compared to the wrestling fans. It's a little bit nerdier on the wrestling side of
Yeah,
things, and
right.
I say that with all love because I got love for both worlds. But yeah, punk,
Right.
I guess, for lack of a
Yeah,
better
I'm
name.
just pi I'm picturing these wrestling fans as just muscle bound freaks, you know? So,
Those are the wrestlers.
okay, right.
Yeah.
Wrestling fans are a whole different breed. Okay.
You
Yeah.
guys have toured a lot with the Cosmic Psychos, one of the greatest bands of all time, a band that's phenomenal. When did they first become a band that you were aware of or interested in?
During high school, you know, just when I was, you know, just combing through punk bands, Australian bands, they really had an effect on me because I could tell that they didn't take themselves seriously, which is something that in some bands I really enjoyed, and some bands I just couldn't get into for that reason. But I love the Psychos because not only were their songs great, they seemed like they were just having fun all the time. Like, you know, they were just taking the piss and, you know, playing these shows to heaps of people, and then they'd, you know, pull their dacks down and moon the crowd or whatever. And it just seemed really fun. And yeah, it's just a super interesting, cool band. And yeah, they took us on our first proper tour, which was a couple of weeks after that Western Australian weekend tour that I was telling you about. That was just around Australia, but yeah, they really kind of took us under their wing, like taught us a lot about playing shows, you know, respecting the, you know, not that we were being disrespectful or anything, but they were like, you know, you gotta, you know, thank the sound guy, you know, talk to the people in the venue, talk to the bands and stuff. It was just like just watching how they kind of operated as a band that had been around for, at that point, like 35 years. It was you know, really like, okay, like this is how you do it, you know.
I always get the vibe when I'm in Australia that there is that sort of continuum in that stuff. Like there are those bands that are still around, be it like the Hard-Ons or Cosmic Psychos or even the Meanies, or bands that like stayed around way longer too, as well, like before members obviously are now passed away and stuff. But it feels like there is this sort of continuum, and there's not like I don't, like there's a lot of generational animosity I find in some places between older punks and younger punks, and I don't really pick up on it. Once again, I'm an outsider, but as much in Australia.
Yeah, and I think that kind of has been somewhat of a thing in Australia, but also yeah, like, you know, bands like Psychos, Hard-Ons, Frenzel, they've been nothing but nice and supportive to us. That, you know, even in regards to that stuff, like I remember talking to Nighty, and he's like, mate, you reckon everyone likes the Psychos? People hate us, you know, like, and he's like, but who cares? You know, you got to focus on the people who like you. You got to focus on having a good time and just, yeah, not letting that stuff get you down, you know?
Yeah, but it's nice because there's like a, I think there's sometimes in punk, especially amongst bands, like a real territorial feeling, the younger bands nipping at your heels, and you don't really get that sharing of knowledge, or you don't really get that sort of like passing of the torch kind of thing as much as I feel like you should.
Yeah, and we were pretty lucky to, you know, to fall into contact with the Psychos, because they're, you know, no better band to really talk to talk to that stuff about. So yeah, I think it's I think that stuff's kind of coming back a bit more now with, people accepting that this is a big thing now. A lot of people are into it. It's not just something that 15 of the people in your hometown know about. It's kind of a massive thing now,
Yeah. Well, that's the other thing, is the reach of this thing has just gotten exponentially bigger as people have had access to it, because it is like, how could you not fall in love with it?
Exactly. Yeah. Especially, at that kind of formative time in your life, it kind of just means everything to you.
Yeah. Where's your favorite place to play and tour?
Man, probably Europe, I'm gonna say, but have a great time everywhere. We go to Europe and the UK quite a bit. UK is always great too, but I just love I love the weirdness of Europe, you know what I mean? Like there's nowhere else like it. Like you can drive an hour and you're in a new country and they speak a new language and you're just going, what the hell? But yeah, it's just kind of an adventure, and the crowds are awesome.
I say that because my favorite place to tour is Australia.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I love.
Right. I'd probably say Australia if I didn't live here,
Yeah, well, like that or the West Coast of the United States. But like looking at the weather you got there, it's like I could like who cares about the West Coast of the United States, weather-wise?
Yeah, I think our beaches are better too,
Hey, I'm not getting involved in that. Like we
but
got a polluted lake you can't really swim in where I'm at. So.
okay.
They're both pretty, as far as I'm concerned. I'll pick fights with wrestling fans. You can pick fights with the beach people.
All right, all right. The
Yeah,
surf punks.
the surf punks. Was there like a big surf punk tradition? I guess
I
Mass
mean,
Hysteria is like a skateboard band. I'm trying to think of like surf punk Australian bands.
yeah, look, I think it was like, I think surfing and music kind of went hand in hand. I don't really know. I'm thinking of bands like Hoodoo Gurus and stuff like that, kind of just like more bands that had somewhat of an alternative edge, but also were kind of just more straight up rock and roll bands rather than punk bands. But Celibate Rifles, bands like that, Sunny Boys, I think those bands all had a big place in surf culture, but I'm not really much of a surfer. I can't really shed too much light on that.
Not that punk isn't a subculture, but I guess in Australia, like it's a lot more part of the musical culture. Like when you get into music, like it's played on Triple J or Double J and there's videos on Rage. Like there's like a pride in this music that you don't really see, maybe in England but it's really like just with the Clash and the Sex Pistols that they really kind of go hard on in that way. But like Australia, you feel like there's like a like and it should be there, but like there's a pride in this music.
Yeah, that's a great point because I've never really noticed that, but yeah, like you whack on, I don't know what the American thing of rage would be. Like, what would that be? Like MTV, maybe,
It
probably
would have
not
been
anymore.
MTV, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, they'd never have like punk. Oh, I guess they might have some punk bands on there, maybe. But they wouldn't, have bands like, the Hard-Ons and Friends and stuff, basically underground bands for
Yeah.
most of their careers. Like they just wouldn't be on major network stations in the States,
Yeah, or even like when I remember being there one of the first times, coming back late at night, going to the hotel room, turning on Rage, and all of a sudden I'm watching like an X video. Like holy shit, like they wouldn't play the American X on MTV late at night at that point.
That's great. I mean, I love Rage and Double J is good too these days, but yeah, I mean, that is really cool that you've noticed that Australian media at least kind of celebrates those unsung heroes bands,
Well, and I think that's important because that's why you wind up having a like in Canada tries to do this as well. Like there's like a lot of government support of the arts, but it tends to be a lot of, in my opinion, shit that gets bigger in Canada for some reason. But Yeah, like in Australia, like I remember hearing at the same time everything was shrinking in the music industry, contracting. CD sales went up slightly, like this way back when, but like that it was bucking the trend, and it was domestic music that people were buying at that time. I guess it was Jet was exploding, and there was like a whole wave of bands around that. But like, there was support for this music, and it went to radio, and it went to TV, and it was, and you can see the results.
And I think a lot of that was probably these bands playing the pub circuit in those days. Like, it's not really much of a thing anymore. Like, you can play some pubs in Australia now, but it's usually an ALH venue, which means it's owned by Woolworths, which is one of the two big supermarket conglomerates out here. So it's not really the same sort of vibe. It's not like playing, in a pub. It's like kind of more of a shopping center kind of pub, so I guess like those were just like, talking to my parents, like they just go to the same pub every weekend, and they'd always have bands like the Angels and Divinyls and stuff like that. And then they go, all right, well, what are we doing on Wednesday night? Because there's a band on that night too. Like they're like these pubs are just booked the entire week full of bands, And I think that, led to bands being able to tour the country and also just get their stuff out there a bit easier. And I think back in those days, people just, yeah, that was just something you did a bit more, Not so much nowadays, I don't think.
And I guess there's so much music happening too. Like there's so many like Angels and the Vinyls. There's also like, what is it? Like Reaction Records, React, the what was the hardcore label in the 80s? Fuck, I'm blanking on the name now. But there's just like all sorts of like scenes happening simultaneously, or
Yeah, definitely.
Permanent
I'm
Damage is
trying.
one of the
Yeah, I'm
bands
trying to
on it.
think of what
Fuck.
that. I'm trying to. Yeah, I mean, I
I
can't
got
remember what that is.
here, I got my Australian records right here. I'm gonna pick one out. One sec. All right. You gotta go to that store though, Vicious Sloth. If you collect records, it's the best
Yeah.
record store in the world. Like, it's
Man, I got to
fucking
check that out.
ridiculous.
I was
It's
in Melbourne like 2 weeks ago, and I was looking at the record stores, and that one just did not pop up.
because it's kind of like it took me like 2 hours to walk there from our hotel. Because it's kind of, I guess, it like way out in the suburbs. But the guy
Right.
who one of the guys who runs it has like the craziest Sharpie sweater collection of all the old sweaters, and they have a bunch of them hanging in
Cool.
the store, and like just wild shit. Sorry, I'm now I can't find one of these fucking records. Reactor Records.
Reactor. Okay, cool.
Yeah, they put out like Depression, and I think Max Rock and Roll also put out a Depression record a little bit later on as well. And
Okay.
yeah, like fuck. Every time I go to Australia, I just hemorrhage money on records. Like it's just. My wife's like, okay, just you can't come back with this much stuff. I will leave you.
Yeah, a whole suitcase full, huh?
Oh my God. Like it feels like going into like a record store is just like it's just like dropping a bucket in the water and pulling out gold every time. Like there's just like so many awesome 7 inches that are out there, and like every time I go there, it's just like some random dollar bin find where I'm like, how have I never heard of this fucking band?
Yeah, it's pretty cool, isn't
Well, it's cool because it's
it?
back now, right? Like it feels
Yeah.
like there's like a lot of cool, interesting stuff coming out of Australia, and maybe, well, obviously there has been the whole time, but it feels like the world's attention is a little more focused on what's happening right now.
I definitely see that too. I mean, there's bands like GT and Split System and such that seem to be doing really well in the States and Europe and stuff and that and all that. And yeah, it's cool that it feels like our secret's kind of out, and everyone's backing these bands now. It's really cool.
Well, anytime, my friend, you want to come back on here and talk about any of this stuff, you are always welcome, and we'll catch up on the pool deck in Las Vegas.
Yeah, sounds great, man. I'll see you there. And thank you. Yeah, it's been a great time talking to
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com. Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.